What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Real ghost stories online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see, I did it written in paint where you just painted.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. Welcome to the show. Our phone number 855-853-4802 to call in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with your real ghost stories. Of course, you can also write them on our website at realghoststoriesonline.com or even email us your audio file story if you want to record it on your smart device and send it to us. Might be a little cheaper than a phone call if you want to do it in your own voice from across the pond, as we would say here, either on this side of the pond or the other side of the pond. You can email that Tony, T-O-N-Y, at realghoststoriesonline.com. On today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, we're going to hear some real ghost stories and experiences from Eric J. Pepin, a teacher, philosopher, and author dedicated to helping others achieve metaphysical and psychic experiences for themselves. Very interesting man. By the time he was 15 years old, he was a sought-after psychic and began teaching his friends to have similar experiences as himself. My goodness. First of all, Eric, welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online.
Thank you very much.
Can you take us back a little bit? Take us back to that time in your life, to your childhood, and give us some background about how all of this began for you.
You know, my whole life has just been filled with paranormal, metaphysical, spiritual, as far as I can remember. You know, it's an interesting background because my mother and father had separated when I was about three. So my mother, being kind of German. She was very scientific, atheist, and that's kind of, you know, the approach she drilled into my thinking. Mm-hmm. My father, on the other hand, came from a Catholic background and was very much into spiritualism, seances, psychic phenomena, paranormal. And so when I would go to visit him or be around that family atmosphere, of course, I was exposed to, you know, entities or them doing seances and stuff like that. And then by the time I would go back home to my mother, you know, I'd get the logic perspective on those experiences. So my whole life has just been filled with it. You know, my birth, evidently, you know, my mother had said she'd looked at me and she seen this glow around me. And she was like trying to shake it off. Like she thought, oh, maybe he's got a lot of hair or something. What's going on? And, you know, so she said she didn't really have an explanation for it. And I thought that was interesting. Yeah. But from day one.
So take us back to some of the first times that you can remember as far as having an experience, and you know, we can call this psychic experience, we can call this paranormal experience, whatever you want to call it, but just kind of that moment where, if you can recall it, where you went, there's something going on here.
Yeah, when I was very young, you review these things as you grow older,
yeah.
There was what I would consider a shadow person,
okay.
And it was one of my first kind of good recollections of something happening, very detailed. I had been hanging out at one of my buddy's houses. We were young. I was probably about maybe 12 or so, 13. And it was raining out, steady kind of rain, East Coast kind of style. And I was on my way out, said my goodbyes. And for some reason, instead of taking a left my normal direction, I felt like I needed to turn to the right and kind of walk through this entryway and kind of walk out to the open area. And I did. And there was this very unusual man kind of in the rain, walking a dog, and he had a big black trench coat. I couldn't make out his face. It was all kind of blackish gray, very big top hat. And, you know, as everybody kind of knows, these shadow people a lot of times are wearing these kind of unusual hats.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of just looked at him. The face moved towards me. I couldn't make out a nose. I couldn't make out a chin. I couldn't make out any facial features other than the fact of the clothing and a dog. And interestingly enough, I couldn't make out the dog either. The dog looked like a black silhouette shape. There was a movement towards me. And at that point, of course, I, you know, panicked and ran for my life.
Sure.
You know, so that was probably one of the strongest first impressions of some kind of phenomena like that. You know, as I grew older, because I was involved with psychic phenomena and spiritual stuff, of course, it kind of goes hand in hand, and you become very curious about ghosts and spirits. One of the other first experiences I also had was I had been visiting my father, and at that time, doing seances was a very kind of big thing, and at that time, it was probably the late 70s. And they were at the kitchen table, maybe about 5-6 family members, I suppose, are all adults. And I had been maybe 10, 12. And I was standing in the doorway with the living room behind me to my grandparents' house. And I was looking out to their large kind of kitchen space. And they were on one of these old 50 style tables with the silver trimming around it. And there's a doorway that leads outside next to them near the table where they were all kind of circled around, kind of doing a seance. And to the left, there's a staircase that goes upstairs. And I was obviously observing them from a distance, being, you know, kind of interested in what was going on. And they were, of course, trying to communicate with a spirit. And I remember looking to the left and seeing what looked like a staticky glowing haze, but definitely of a shape. And I, of course, realized, hey, this is something very strange. And I remember, you know, shouting to my dad or whispering more or less, dad, you know, and he was like kind of shooing me with his hands, like, you know, Eric, go away. And I was like, dad, you know, and he looks at me and I'm pointing at this. And he turns around, he looks at everybody, jumps out of the table and they see it. They're all kind of running out the door and scattering.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was just like locked in shock. You know, I thought, okay, this is not good. And I remember looking at this what is an entity, you know, but not at that time fully realizing what it was and wondering, you know, what is it, you know, how does it talk, you know, how does it see me, you know, I don't see eyes, but clearly this is some kind of disembodied intelligence. You know, so these are the kind of things I've grown up with. And of course, mm-hmm. you know, pursuing those things later on and just amazing experiences.
It really sounds like you're someone who obviously has, you know, and you even say it, you know, you have psychic abilities, are very sensitive, probably empathic, and are on a scale, you know, much higher than the average individual who's not honed these sort of things in. I want to talk about that a little bit as far as, just the average person, if you will, for lack of a better term, someone who doesn't feel that they are that empathic, someone who doesn't feel they have these sort of abilities. Is that a skill? Is that something that is in all of us that can be learned or turned on or honed in? Or is that something that's just kind of there for some and not so much for others?
Anybody who has an interest in this absolutely 100% can develop these. I teach it all the time. I've been teaching it over for a decade. We guarantee results. I'm that confident of it. And day in and day out, it's just a matter of having a process by which you can understand it. We usually start off by teaching people how to see the human aura. And when I say to them, can you see the aura? A lot of times people say, well, yeah, I can see the aura. And I'll say, well, tell me what it looks like. And they go, well, it's this. And I'm like, what you're really saying is you don't really see it with your eyes. They're like, well, no, I kind of feel it or imagine, you know, what it's looking like. I'm like, no, you can see it with your eyes, just like you can see any object or anything. And so we go through this process where we have kind of look at another person at maybe 10 feet away, and I'll say, focus, you know, your eyesight on their forehead at first, but kind of be aware of the silhouette of their body. It's a very faint glow, like heat coming off of a road or an outlining. And a lot of times I'll say, well, I don't see any colors. And I'm saying almost 99% of the time, nobody sees colors at first. So don't look for colors and then be dismissive because you didn't see anything. Mm-hmm. It's there. And as you look at the forehead, if you look directly at the edge, and you can't see it. You need the curvature of your eye almost like a prism to bring the color or the awareness of it in. And as your eye is sitting on the forehead staring at the person about 10 feet away, mm-hmm. you will see a very faint outlining. It's very dim. And as you adjust your eyes, it will get brighter. Now, it's not going to be intensely bright. It's not going to be something that's like incredibly distinctive. But as you play and you practice with it, within literally 60 seconds to you know, a minute and a half, you will clearly see the defining outlining of this glow. And a lot of people will say, well, I don't see it on the chest. And I'm like, well, it's transparent. So it's kind of like your soul's puffed up an inch or two larger than your body. But if you look at it directly, you're going to see right through it. It's like finer than glass. But if you look at the edges, you will see the outlining no matter which way they turn. If you put your hand up near a wall away from you and you just move it from left to right, you'll see the etching of the aura going around your hand. Most people are shocked because their whole life they've never realized this. And other people will say, I have seen this. I just didn't know what it is. And as they play with it, it really gets more defined. And so that is the first step. I try to show people to see the human aura. That becomes amazing. And then I explain to them, if you were to think about it, if you didn't have a physical body, but this is really the real you, this is your soul, this is your embodiment, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's inside the body like a container. Once the body is gone, this is what we call a ghost. This is what we call a consciousness existing outside of the body. So when you see a ghost, the fastest way to recognize or see it is if you've practiced to see the human aura, then try to think in that same way when you go into a place that has interesting vibes, and you will most likely start to see the manifestation or the presence of an entity.
And it's the aura. It's so once we die, that this moves on beyond us. So if you're looking at a body, a dead body, that aura is gone. It's moved
there
on.
It's a little bit kind of tricky, but there is always an aura on every single thing.
Okay.
On a table, on the wall, everything is absorbing light from the ceiling and a sound that we're speaking. It's being absorbed. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I often say it's like a sponge. If you were to drip Kool-Aid on it, it would swell and eventually it's going to start leaking the Kool-Aid out so you can see it, mm-hmm. or milk or whatever.
Yeah.
So every object absorbs energy. So it's eventually radiating it off slowly. So everything has an auric glow. If you begin to see it everywhere, and everybody does. What is unique is anything that's living, a plant, animals. Their aura seems to be stronger and brighter, and it fluctuates. It's like the consciousness can affect it, but a plant not so much, but it's definitely a different aura. On a human, because they're obviously more intelligent, there's more thoughts, more complex emotions running through them, you begin to see not only a stronger aura, but you can start to see fluctuations in it. And eventually, you get good enough to see color. And it's not color that's like super bright or, you know, like just like neon or something. It's like kind of dropping two or three glass drops of food dye, like blue food dye, into a glass of water, and it's clearly blue, but it's also transparent. And so once you get that idea of what you're looking for, all of a sudden you begin to see that. And it can go intensely colorful. It's just how much you allow your mind to kind of move into that state where it's not editing, preventing you from seeing things. And I, of course, I show people that, because they're like, how do you know it edits? And not to plug my first book, but in Handbook of the Navigator, there's a breakdown, and we say, count how many letter Fs are in this, like, you know, seven paragraphs. And they're like, oh, there's three. We're like, no, there's like nine in there. And they're like, no way. And they do it again. They're like, well, now I can find five. And they count it again. It goes back to three. Bottom line is, they're nine. We show it to them, and they're shocked that the brain prevents them from seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
So we go on to teach that there's so many things that your brain prevents you from seeing. It's like you got to retrain yourself to really see what's going on. And that goes for entities, spirits, you know, all of these things. And when that happens, people are blown away.
Would that explain why there seems to be that children are able to see these
Absolutely.
Things a lot easier? Okay. Yeah. It also seems to also answer the question a little bit too, where we talk about haunted objects. With everything
yep.
having an aura and energy
yep.
absorbing and releasing, that
yep.
really, I mean, as simplistic as it is, I mean,
yeah.
it's true. I mean, that's yep. how these
well,
things happen.
You know, this is what I explain to students that I teach. You know, for many years, I would work on cases where, you know, I'd have to either try to locate people or do psychic readings and such like that. And I became very famous for this, for my accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, that part of my mother, that kind of German scientist part of me, was always like, well, you know, I always have to hold objects. And the objects I prefer have some level of metal on them. Now, it's not to say that all objects don't have this kind of vibe to it. They do, but it tends to be jewelry for me is the strongest ones, because it's always on a person.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that consciousness energy is absorbed into objects that we wear all the time.
Sure.
And my point is, I'll say to somebody, have you ever wore your friend's shirt for a few moments? You feel like them until your energy saturates it more so, because it's on you. But for a while, you assimilate almost a part of them temporarily. As far as objects go, that object is imbued because you're constantly wearing it. So when you hand it to someone like me, it's like a videotape. It's like in our mind, we're pulling data. So what we call imbuing is to put consciousness or information, or to like computer program an object to radiate a feeling. So objects that what you guys would call possessed or negative is usually an object that has been programmed with just really negative energy or energy that's just really hateful or such. And this is what we would call a negative object or program object. Some people would call it demonic.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see it as programmed energy that's radiating, and people, instead of touching it and getting information from it, like psychically, people feel these things. You feel it when you walk into a house. It could look beautiful in there, but you feel like, ah, this is not a good place. And you can go to a place that looks visually non-appealing, but you're like, no, it's very relaxing. It's the vibe and energy of a place. It's programmed by the people and the beings that are in that environment, and then other people can feel it, whether they realize it or not.
So let's talk about this for a second. If someone had an object,
yeah.
like a piece of jewelry, for example,
yeah.
let's say that individual was not such a good person.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
very negative, doing bad things mm-hmm. in their life, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
et cetera.
Sure.
They die. That piece of jewelry goes on somewhere else. And then
yep.
for whatever reason, whoever then possesses that jewelry, say they bought it at an antique store or whatever.
Yep.
Does that object that has that energy in it, is it taking on a life of its own? Is it exuding its own thoughts, or for lack of a better term, or directives to that individual, or is it the individual who has it that is now being influenced just by the energy that's with the object?
Well, and that's an excellent question. And what we teach is this: every object, and this is a great day and age because people understand what a computer disk is, a USB drive, something you put data on. When a person wears an object, they are programming it with their data, their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions, all of that, okay? Mm-hmm. So when a new person takes that object and puts it on them, you're the battery. You're turning the power back to that program. It's like somebody handing a USB. It's pretty much just sitting with data on it, but it's not necessarily doing something. So it finds an energy source to kind of bring it to life. So when you put it on you, your energy is bringing it to life, but that data now is starting like a computer virus working on you, working on your consciousness, and it's alive. It's like that negative energy takes on its own infusion into you. It's like a pariah. Mm-hmm. And this is what we consider, you know, really just negative energy. But if you broke it down, that's what's happening.
Is there such a thing then that you would believe that there would be like a conscious demonic force at play with anything with an object? Because there's a lot of times we have the cases of, oh, this object is, you know, literally they say it's possessed by a demon. There's something in here that is a conscious entity, not just for lack, you know, lack of a better term, just negative surrounding and negative, you know, feelings emitting from, but literally a conscious something there that's going to take control of something.
Well, I take on kind of a little bit of a science approach and, mm-hmm. and a spiritual approach. And my belief is, and from my experiences, is that, you know, no object is going to house an entity in it. I mean, that's like, you know, if you were to pass away, are you going to want to hang around and observe somebody 24/7 or just, you know, move into an object? But what it's going to do is that object takes on a energy, a vibration that's just an awful frequency, and you bring it into your home and it starts to leak. It's again, it's like mm-hmm. food dye. If you put it on the couch, it becomes the couch, and it just keeps running until the whole environment is like in this crazy negative energy. Now, entities are known, okay, to, and this is where people think it's a possessed object.
Sure.
They are attracted to the object and they keep returning to it. And then it's like something that they become obsessed about. Many entities are in a sleep state, like a dream state. So they don't really have an understanding of time. They're not relative to time because they're not decaying or aging anymore. They're energy. And so in like running in your dream or having a reoccurring dream, they are having a reoccurring consciousness. So to them, they can't separate the fact of what is going on in our world versus theirs. They're just in the moment and they keep repeating it. So the object becomes, you know, who has this object? Why do you have it? And it's like extreme emotions. This is what creates a very negative or violent entity. Other entities just seem to be drawn to it, and they are attracted to the object because they have some kind of connection to it, that it has great sentimental value. Or psychologically, they, like other people, can be a little bit mentally broken, and they make a fixation on an object, and that's what's, you know, continually drawn in their brain. Or they don't have a brain, but their consciousness, mm-hmm. it's fixated on an object. Like they can't break their connection to it. It's like a repetitive habit.
Sure. Are all of these entities, were these all people who once walked the earth?
Well, I'm a firm believer that most entities are misclassified. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been to hundreds of places that were haunted. There's one in a classic one. Is in Pomfret, and it's known as the Lost Village. And it was a village or town probably in the 1700s that was attempted to be settled. And what happened was they built a few cellar holes, and you can, it's about a mile circular area, and it's very interesting. You could see where the wagon used to come down this road. It's about a mile or two hike through the woods to get to the location, but you could see where they might have pulled wagons. There's like still rutted areas. And the cellar holes are very intact, very detailed. The entire area is, you can see where they made holes into the stone to tie up the horses while they kind of did whatever they were doing. And it was famously known for audible hauntings, meaning you could hear people talking, or maybe a group of kids are playing, and there were stories where researchers who went out there from colleges at the time would try to track down where these kids were laughing, and when they would get close, the laughter would move away, and they would keep trying to find it, and they never could. Mm-hmm. But very clear. So when I went out there at that time with my girlfriend and we explored those things constantly, that's all we used to do, we did not hear children, but there was one occasion where we're sitting there. It was a very quiet summer day, and we were in the main area where there's cellar holes, but you can sit up top. And I could distinctly, clearly, as if it was feet away from me, hear the thumping of horse hoofs pulling and hearing the sounds of what was like a wood carriage. And there was what I would say a gentleman talking to what sounded perhaps his son. And they were kind of having a conversation. It was a little difficult to make out what they were saying, but you could hear the jingling from the tassels or whatever, from the ropes to pull the horse and such. And you really got a distinct feeling like there was this pulley thing, this object in front of you, but you couldn't see anything. And then it faded away. I have so many stories I can relate to that, but the bottom line is this. I think it's a sort of time vortex.
Okay.
And so people were thinking at the time they're ghosts. No, I think that the area is capturing on rare occasion a time loop, and you're hearing basically different things as if that place was happening overlaid with our current timeline. And that's why you can hear these things audibly. So it's very interesting. So I think a lot of things are misclassified. I think a lot of houses, originally from the East Coast, that we would go to, people would hear, you know, noises, and we heard them. It would be like, Mary, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what it really came down to was, and I am a firm believer in proof, that there was once a potter's wheel that was found from, you know, archaeological research, you know, probably out in, you know, the Arab countries and such. And they were able to put a crude kind of needle for a sternograph to that you would use for records, but they put it on the potter's wheel that was designed for that, and they could hear the potter talking to his daughter, who was a few feet away, about what they were going to eat that night. So the sound, when you put it up near a speaker, you could feel it on your hand. When you look at these old houses on the East Coast, those are your primary ones that are known for being famously haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the walls, we use sheetrock, but what they used, it's kind of, they would put chicken wire up, frame it out with wood, and then they would take this paste. It's like a really thick white paste. And if you look at it, it's very got shiny pieces in it, metallic stuff. And they would put it on the wall. And I believe that was like a crude material that could record sound. Now, you have storms that come in, and this is what creates creaking of houses. The pressure is like pushing the walls outward and inward due to the pressure of the air, storm, electricity. You can feel it in the air. If you're from the East Coast, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I think these are forms of energy that make a house literally become like a speaker system. So if we go back 200 years in these houses and there's a poker game downstairs and the home is being entertained by a husband and wife, there's people, you know, talking at the thing, maybe at times laughing really, really loud. There's maybe the wife down the hall who's getting some food or some drinks for them, and they're hollering to her, you know, Mary, you know, can you grab such and such? I think that in modern age, when these storms come in or the weather changes, don't even have to be a storm, just the air pressure changes, it creates a very crude speaker system. It's like taking an old record, if you're old enough to know this, and turning the speed down. So what sounds like music or words, you slow it down, it becomes from, hey, 1, 2, 3, 4, to, hey, 1, 2, 3, 4, slower,
sure.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3. And this is what they're hearing. You can distinguish a voice, but it sounds very creepy. But that's what's going on. It's not a ghost at all.
It's more like an echo. Almost like an echo, if you will, of the past. So are you saying that in a situation like that, it's not even necessarily that it's not back to the future? It's not necessarily, I mean, this is my
guess. No, it's a recording.
It's a recording
in the actual physical walls of the house.
Sure.
And it was probably still curing, okay, when it's just like, you know, the perfect moment happened and it was captured in time. It's not to say that I haven't come across real entities. Absolutely, I have.
Sure.
But I think that if you throw every single phenomena into a pile, it's useless. I want to know why. How come they're here? Why do they do what they do? Why does an entity appear in certain clothing and walk down the hall and then take a left and go right through the wall and there's no door there? You find out years, you know, later, you do research on the property, there was an actual door there. They just removed it. So is that really an entity, or is that some type of holographic through the same mechanisms as you find the speaker system of a house? Is there things that we still yet do not understand in science that are projecting this entity? Now, does that mean I don't believe in entities? I know the fact that they exist because I have hunted for the real thing and found them.
Sure. And that's really interesting because, I mean, that's one of those things we talk about a lot. We get stories in of homes that have been dramatically remodeled, floors gone, you know, balconies not there anymore. But when they do have a haunting, sometimes, especially when what they'll call, you know, the residual haunting, it's something that's replaying itself. They see the same thing quite often. Sometimes they'll see the entity walking over a balcony that is not there until they realized, oh, there was one there.
Exactly.
And that's where we start to wonder, well, are these, if they're conscious, are they still playing by the rules of the time when they were alive? Or is this something else, much like what you're describing with the record playback?
Yes. I think the majority of cases like that is a phenomena that I think science will one day come to understand. I think it's a projection playing something that got caught during the perfect weather, perfect electrical storm, perfect air pressure. It's like winning the lottery.
Sure.
And over hundreds of years, phenomena is recorded. And I think that it's just projecting itself in that particular place. It doesn't mean it's the house at all. It could just be the land it's built on. It could have a high mineral value, magnetic value in the ground, and it's allowing this phenomena or properties to be fueled that it creates this repeat pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are cases where I've been on where people simply, different groups of people will describe the same thing, right down to the hand movement, exactly when it's going to happen. To me, that's a replay. We're as a culture, advanced enough to understand that now. So these things, it's hard to say unless, you know, you're there to witness it or to check it out. But I believe that probably 65% of the cases that are considered hauntings are either audible or visual projections.
That's really interesting. It's a very interesting way of looking at it. And I think I would agree with that very much so.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about shadow people, because oftentimes I think they get a bad rap. I think a lot of times you get, it's a shadow person. It must be dark or bad. I'm of the belief of, just based on, you know, the experiences and the thousands of stories we're told here, I don't think so. I mean, I think there's good, there's bad. It's almost like you wouldn't judge a person. You know, every single person is the same way because of their looks or something, or every dog is the same because, I think there's very, very a huge difference.
Agreed 100%. Yeah.
In shadow people. But I want to talk about that a little bit as far as, because you mentioned earlier about the hat. We do get a lot of that.
Yep.
We get a lot that don't have the hats as well.
Yep.
What is your understanding of what, you know, and we're talking kind of in a broad spectrum to begin with here, but of the shadow person phenomena that we hear so much about?
Well, I mean, I'm going to kind of put myself right out there, but I do not believe they are of our physical dimension. I believe they are in a kind of coexisting, or all dimensions are kind of coexisting, but they are of another dimension. And I think that the properties of the physics for whatever dimension they're in, and I think that makes up their physicalness, is very different than ours. We think of organicness as very dense. I think that it's another form of reality, if you will. And I believe that they are curious about us. And I think that what happens is that they need dark spaces for the most part. It's what allows them to manifest into our world, and I think they're very curious about observing us. I've never really heard of a shadow person harming any person. I've seen people terrified. I've seen people believe that they were touched or something bad was happening. And of course, we're scared. You know, you see something, you're terrified, and this lets the mind race. But at the end of the day, my encounters with them, I've never seen them to be harmful. What I get out of them is they're from another world or another dimension, and they manifest. I believe that there's a level of energy that maybe is required from our field of energy for them to assist, or what draws them to certain people versus others.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that there is two variations. I think one, they wear these hats, and the question is it just seems so odd. Why would they wear these hats? You know, they're always kind of the same. And I believe, like, we culturally like our blue jeans, and we wear sweatshirts T-shirts or whatever might be common for us, this is a commonality in their culture. And mm-hmm. It's weird to look at it that way, but logically it makes sense to me. The trench coat is a thing that they would wear. Why don't they change their style? Maybe it's just not something that works in their reality. So for them, we see it as a trench coat. Who knows what that is in their reality? What is this hat? It may not be a hat at all. This could be like what our earlobes and ears for us could look very strange to them. Mm-hmm. So as far as ones without it, I mean, that's like saying maybe there's you know, Asian and their eyes are different versus maybe Anglo-Saxon and our eyes are different. Who, maybe it could be customary, mm-hmm. you know, but they're still of the same species and yet. So I think they're curious. I also do not believe that they see us the same way we necessarily see objects in the room. I think that if you think in terms of infrared or various different structures or added structures to the palette of what the eye can see, I think that because just like I feel like spirits, you know, or entities, they do not perceive us the way we think they're perceiving us or how we see them. They might see us like we're seeing them. They might see us as a hazy outline of a structure with maybe some type of glow, and our room is kind of there, but it's more like abstract lines that they see as energy, and they're observing us.
Sure.
And for them to stay in the darker spots, I think it's more or less like a doorway for them, that at least how we would interpret a doorway for us. Now, it doesn't mean they have doors and walk through a room like their reality. It may be very different. It's just completely unusual to us. Mm-hmm. And so this is what I think they're doing. They're observing.
Do you think all shadow people, quote unquote, are from that other dimension? Or do you think there can be variations of a shadow person where the shadow person A may very well be from that other place with the hat and the trench coat? Shadow person B that doesn't seem to have that. Could shadow person B be literally the ghost of Aunt Edna, or the energy or the aura of Aunt Edna?
Absolutely.
Going around?
Yes.
But they just come across very similarly.
Exactly. I think that it's like trying to define from a distance a collie, you know, for a dog versus a species similar.
Sure.
Okay. Or even, you know, it becomes very tricky because these are all formats of what I call energy. Mm-hmm. They're not wearing clothing. They're not organic. So when we perceive it, you know, this is what I call the stump log syndrome. The human mind from a distance will add arms and a head to a stump that's been cut off in the distance.
Sure.
And we know this is a fact. So when we see what looks like an entity in 10 to 1, it is something, okay? We may tend to dress it one way or the other in the mind, but at the end of the day, they can be very interesting. I remember a particular time when I was investigating this one house that was abandoned that had a huge history of hauntings and ghosts and just an amazing location for this kind of investigation. And at first, you know, the impression would be that it was just, you know, a shadow person there, and it turned out to be a very aggressive negative entity, what most people would call a demon per se. It was just very physical, manifesting properties of just you know, able to hit objects, slam doors. Mm-hmm. And so it was mistaken identity, or, you know, identification. And yeah, they absolutely can look very similar in some cases.
How many ghosts, you know, quote unquote, do you think we have out there, or what someone would define as an entity, a shadow person? Insert any word you want here to describe a ghost, you know, how generally
right.
It can be done.
Well,
are actually living individuals. That's my question. Meaning like astral projection, someone having a dream and ending up in another place. We give stories of that all the time, where someone dreamt they were at their childhood home during a child's campfire. And a couple weeks later, this woman goes to go visit the home again, just to go see this area that she used to visit. And one of the little kids freaks out because he sees what he thought was a ghost. And it was really this woman that was dreaming she was there, but somehow projected herself there. How often do you think that happens, where the ghosts, like I said, quote unquote, that people think they see are really essentially a form of astral projection that's going on?
It's I think it's a case by case. If I was going to give percentages, yeah, I would be very reluctant to put that out there.
Sure.
Because I think it's collecting this kind of information and sorting it out is incredibly elusive. Mm-hmm. And I would say, if you're going to ask me how many encounters are out there of different variations, then I would say to you, tell me how many species of creatures are in the ocean.
Sure.
Okay. And I think that most people just want to classify everything as a ghost, a demon, or a spirit, mm-hmm. you know, and you can just count them on your hand. And I just think that's crazy.
Yeah.
I think there are alien life. I think there are other dimensions. I think that there are our dimensions where there are projected. And I think that grouping them into one cluster is, you know, or a simplified cluster is crazy. I've spent my life trying to define what these different things are, because what's the point of just knowing of a haunting? I want to know why. Why?
Yeah.
I mean, how does a ghost hear? There's no eardrums to get sound. How does it speak? There's no lungs or vocal cords to go boo. I mean, there's no eye cones for reflective light to process. So the question is how is it? It's seeing us. How is it thinking? How is it communicating? How is it perceiving us? Those are the things I've always wanted to know, and those are the answers that I've attained finally.
Sure.
So, it's a case by case situation, and you know, all of them are interesting and fascinating. But you know, when one sees, you know, someone that's astrally projecting, you know, at the end of the day, I am at a point in my life where, you know, I go back, you know, I teach spirituality also, and I will look back at these gurus who are meditating under, you know, Bodhi trees and such. And, you know, they meditate for a week, they come out, and the first thing they're saying is, you know, reality is but an illusion. What they're really saying in our reality is, reality is the matrix. It's the same thing. They just didn't have the words for that. All the leading scientists now are saying, look, we're pretty sure now reality is a hologram. It's still the same thing. It's the matrix. Call it whatever you want. So when you really think now in our day and age, the common person now understands computers. They understand now kind of a simulated reality. It's not like 10 years ago where we still were grasping with that idea as a majority of people. Mm-hmm. When you think of reality now and you think about phenomena where people are popping in and out of our reality, or unusual things are happening, or paranormal things are happening, I think these are glitches in the matrix. I think that these are pockets of disturbed programming that are creating these phenomena, or the opportunity for phenomena to happen. How is it possible for me to predict the future? And in that aspect, there's a data breach, or there's a way to attain some of that data. It doesn't mean that I believe everything is prescripted. I think the goal is to let us kind of unfurl and see what it can learn from us as far as that aspect goes. So when you look at all paranormal, all ghosts, all entities, really the most truthful underlining is that there's a backdrop of a holographic field, and at times it overlays. And my objective is, can I exploit this? Can I take advantage of this and utilize it in any way? And that is the things that I teach.
Sure. And getting a much better understanding of what it is, where obviously we call these things paranormal, but in the reality of everything, once we have a better understanding, these things could be as normal as anything else until we understand exactly what is going on and how it's happening.
Well, I always say to people, you know, when we see something we don't understand, of course there's the you know, fight or flight syndrome. This is natural.
Sure.
And we become very scared, and we paint the picture. But I, you know, it's very, 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 very rare that I have come across an entity that aggressively attempted to harm me. I mean, I have only one bad case that I probably can bring up that was significant, but otherwise, you know, I've had more cases with people that were negative than I have with entities, you know. So to me, I think, you know, you're talking about people that are, you know, no longer in their body. They're, for some reason, still here, you know, not kind of moving on or reincarnating or moving on to wherever they're going to go. And the question is why? They used to read books. They might have driven cars. They might have built something. Maybe they lived in the 1800s and they still would have talked and communicated, laughed, played cards. What is going on with them that they've simplified their existence to a rudimentary process of haunting?
Yeah, that's
there has to be logic behind it.
That's what I always wonder as well, is why is that happening? Do we have a choice once we're gone as to what we want to do? Do we have the option of, hey, you can go haunt your family and watch out for them? or you know, are you going to go to you know, the pie in the sky or whatever, you know, whatever the belief system is, you know, is there a choice or is it just kind of like luck of the draw, whatever the weather happens to be that day is where your energy is going to go? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I look at it like mental health. You know, the closest thing we have to the afterlife is our consciousness in our body now. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of what we're utilizing when we leave our body. And so if you are mentally distraught at the time of your physical departing, that extreme distressed state of mind can be like looped in a repeat pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It's more or less you're mentally broken.
Sure.
You know, it's and I believe that this is a contribution to people who now are essentially immortal. They're made of energy to kind of have this repeat. So in your mind, you can go to bed every night and have a reoccurring dream, a reoccurring nightmare. I mean, you know, there's many people have some of this stuff that reoccurs every so often, but it goes for decades.
Sure.
So in their mind, they're living that moment of a dream, their consciousness, there is no body. They are the body, their consciousness. So they're repeating what they believe. So instead of becoming this wavery energy, they're constructing their body as the way they believe they are. The energy is just adhering to that shape.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're repeating in their mind something that they're in anguish about or obsessed about, and they can't let go of that. And this is, you know, one part of what a haunting is. Hence the reason, you know, go to the light. It's like trying to wake somebody out of a dream, and they gather their senses. When most people die and they leave their physical body, there is what I call a massive collective clearing of consciousness. You no longer have biochemicals contributing to your emotions. You kind of have this very relaxed, clear way of thinking. There's no anguish of emotions. There's no lust. There's no envy. It's kind of like you really mature very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And your attachment to life, because you're, if you believe in past lives or you believe in whatever, there is this collective part of memory rapidly building in your mind. It's like you should begin to remember everything. And I will have sometimes a student say to me, well, how come we can't remember it in our physical body? And I says, well, at times you can, but if imagine you could remember everybody you ever loved dying, you wouldn't be able to function physically. You'd be so distressed. So there's a buffer, a security level more or less to your own mind so that you can function in each life and be able to. But when you leave your body, you get all that, but you don't have the pumping of chemicals in your body emotionally, which is the organic part. You're separated from that. So this is more of an advanced state. So you tend to let go of these things. The hauntings are from beings that never are allowed to attain that next level of shifting into that state of mind. So they are more or less stuck with a mind or a brain pattern that was distressed, and this becomes this fixation with a situation, and they act out in a very mortal human organic way, and this is what makes them look aggressive or in pain or suffering. I mean, when you think of most spirits, not all of them, but at least 70%, it's always this distraught situation. It's always scary or negative, or they're doing something awful or something. And then there's about 30% of the cases where, you know, it's either a kid or a passive, you know, spirit just kind of looking out the window or moving through the house. And again, you got to throw in all the stuff we spoke earlier of classifying it.
When you have something like that, someone that's stuck in a distraught state, is there mm-hmm. any way for them to get beyond it?
You got to wake them up. You got to think of them as if they were sleepwalking.
Okay.
Their mind is anything you say becomes part of the dream. So they're only getting bits and pieces of what you're saying, and it's going to be the bits and pieces they focus on that most relates to how they're feeling. And usually that's anxiety, that's fearful, it's danger. It's like, so they're going to pick up any word that you say in that sense. So the trick is to be as relaxed as you can be and talk to them in a way that is very relaxing. But, you know, here's the thing. A ghost can't necessarily hear you, okay? Mm-hmm. They don't have ears. So what they can do is they can feel you. You have a magnetic field, a field of energy electrically that actually goes outside of your body. We know this is science fact. So I believe that anything you feel empathetically, emotionally, they get that feeling. I'll have to say if it was a pregnant woman, they get a craving. Before they knew what the craving was, they knew what it was. They just had to pin what the name was. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, I'm craving something. Oh my God, it's chocolate bar. So 10 seconds before they named it, they already knew what it was. They just had to wait long enough for them to sort it out in their head and vocalize it. So when you think of all the objects in your house, a table, a coffee mug, I often say, don't touch the coffee mug. Feel it. Feel it like with your lips from a distance. Feel the weight of it, the temperature of it. Now, if you got that as a feeling in you without looking at a coffee cup, you'd go, oh, why am I thinking about a coffee cup? It would hit you a few seconds later. We tag everything with words, but thought is faster than vocal words, and we use them in our head, but there's no need. An entity can feel what you're thinking. If you think of an object, they will get it like the same way where we have the same thing with a pregnant woman, a craving. It's information. So you want to emote to them a certain feeling, and that feeling should be wake up. What does it feel to wake up? What does it feel to gain your consciousness or your awareness of the environment? That's what you want to impart to them because they will absorb it just like that virus does for us in reverse with an object. You need to insert into them a feeling of waking up, and they will often kind of come to their senses.
Are they reliant then on the living to help them move on if they're in that state, or can another energy or entity out there also do that job?
Inevitably, I believe the universe takes care of itself. Okay. And this is why you don't have hauntings of cavemen walking through your house, you know, looking for their cave. I think it can go on. It depends on how obsessed the entity is at the moment they depart their physical body. Mm-hmm. And that is like really focused and intentful. It's like willful. Okay. That can last 100 to 300 years because time is like a blink of an eye. There is no time. Mm-hmm. There's time for us, but not for them. So in most cases, most hauntings, I think, kind of autocorrect, if you will, probably within maybe a year to as much as 5 years, 7 years, 10 years.
Interesting. That's one of those things I did wonder about, because it does seem there's almost a cutoff in a lot of places as far as what the ghost will be wearing or where they seem to be from. And I go, well, why? You know, it's been around a lot longer than that. Why are we only seeing so far back? But that's an interesting thing to think about.
Well, there was also a progression I recall once of a haunting where, you know, I say that the ghost is coming too, but to wake up could take 10 years. And how you mark that is back in the early day, people would see it, you know, the ghost perhaps in this dress. And as time progressed, it deteriorates into more of a fuzz or a haze or whatever. And I think their mind is starting to let go of believing they're in our reality and construct it to our reality. Sure. And it's like they're bridging over to letting go of all that mental thought, holding that energy shape of clothing and stuff.
Sure. Makes sense. Eric, it's been great talking with you. This has been a really, really fun conversation. Why don't you tell our audience where they can find out more about your books and your work and your teaching?
Okay, higherbalance.com, higherbalance.com. We have books, we have lectures, we have videos. Everything's on the site. I strongly suggest call in. We have a staff that's wonderful here, and tell them what your interests are. I've lecture on pretty much everything, but we focus on basically teaching people how to get immediate experiences. And I've got, you know, 85-year-old people that I've taught how to see auras, move energy. I mean, you name it, we do it. We keep it real simple, kind of clear out all the complex stuff and just get down to nuts and bolts, and I let people make up their own mind. But we're all about experience, and one experience is worth 1,000 books, and that's what we focus on.
Very interesting. Eric, thank you so much for talking with us today. I'm glad we were connected.
All right, and thank you.
There you go. That wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Thank you again to Eric J. Pepin for joining us on the show and sharing his experiences and viewpoints on what we talk about all the time here at Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like our show, please consider supporting it and helping us to stay on the air by becoming an EPP, Extra Podcast Person. Get all the bonus episodes of our show. More than 80 some of them now for you, almost up to 90 there. Also exclusive video content, interviews, and more on our bonus website. Just go to ghostpodcast.com and click Become an EPP. That's ghostpodcast.com. You will not regret it. excellent, excellent ghost stories up there. Our best stuff is what we put on our EPP website, which is ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thank you for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.
What if you could get more from what you already do? As a Shell Fuel Rewards member, that's just a regular Monday evening. You get more rewards, more savings, and more special offers. Earn rewards when shopping, dining out, and fueling up. And all of that becomes fuel savings when you're at the pump. Use the Shell app and enjoy life with more. Your nearest Shell station is less than 5 miles away.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.